Before we kick off today's episode, I got something that could save you a ton of time this season. If you're a grassroots coach trying to juggle work, life, and soccer, Soccer Coach Weekly is an absolute game changer. Since 2006, they have been trusted by coaches from all over the world, delivering fun, ready-to-go drills that keep players focused, learning, and loving the game, even when you're short on time. And here's the best part. Chat by the Pitch listeners get 50% off a full year of premium access. Just click the link in show notes and use the promo code EN50 at checkout. That's EN50 for half off. Plan fast, coach smart, Soccer Coach Weekly.
Hey, soccer friends. I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of Team Player's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give Team Player a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I have Sam Junka. If you know the name, that means you follow the MLS. If you really know the name, you know he played for FC Dallas, and now he's playing for Real Salt Lake. I'm not going to share too much more than that, but we did have a great chat, and so let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
My name is Sam Junka, and I'm a defender for Real Salt Lake in the MLS.
Thank you, Sam, for coming on today. I'm excited for this interview today. It's great to have more players coming on because at the end of the day, you are the role models for the kids out there. And as a parent, having my children watch you, I appreciate how great of a role model you have been for us to be able to watch you for the last 2 years at FC Dallas. So let's start off with your playing time. So where did you grow up and where did you start playing and first kick the soccer ball around?
I was born in Santa Barbara, California, and I lived there until I was 8 years old. I started playing soccer probably around 6 years old, just recreational AYSO. I started playing because I love sports and also because I saw my big brother playing soccer. The soccer scene was quite good in Santa Barbara. Even with AYSO, there was, at that age, there were all-star teams at the end of the season. It made it fun because it was a little bit more competitive and the level was good, even though it was recreational. That's how my journey started with soccer.
Was soccer the end all be all? Were you a multi-sport athlete growing up? And what time did you decide to play soccer?
I primarily played soccer. I tried some other sports, but not as much as my big brother. I did a little bit of basketball when I was young. And then again, in middle school, I played for the middle school team. When I lived in Japan, I did some swimming. It wasn't necessarily competitive, but I was going a couple times a week and they had ranks and you could rank up. And otherwise, I played things like baseball, football. I played that in at lunchtime, intramural, those kinds of things. Competitively in an organized setting, it was primarily just soccer, basketball, and swimming.
So at what point did you decide, or what moment made you decide that soccer is your future? What age was this that this all started to transform for you?
I would say I knew I wanted to play professionally when I was maybe around 11 or 12 years old. At that time, I was just really enjoying soccer, and my passion for it developed through watching YouTube videos of players that I like Ronaldinho, Cristiano Ronaldo, Zlatan. I loved just looking up their videos and trying their moves in the backyard. My passion for the game really grew during that time. I didn't know the path to become a professional athlete, professional soccer player in particular, but I just knew that's what I wanted to do, and I was gonna figure it out one step at a time.
As a parent with young players, were you the kid that was always kicking the ball off the wall at home or going outside and playing every day, or did it just naturally grow into that for you?
When I was around that time, yeah, I was always kicking a ball around in the backyard, in the home, parents getting mad at me about kicking a ball. I tried to use a flat ball so it was more harmless. I could break less stuff with it. I was pretty obsessed at that time, yeah.
That's awesome. So did you have any athletes, you talked about the athletes that you looked up to, anyone local that you grew up with other than your brother or cousins or other family members that you looked up to locally that helped you, encourage you to shape you to where you were going?
I would say I looked up to the players that came from the San Jose Bay Area that were playing professionally, especially the ones that were overseas, because it's always been a dream of mine to play in Europe. And there was one player from the end of the forest, one of the clubs that I played for, named Mark Pelosi, who was playing at Liverpool at the time. And I really looked up to him and his career. There was also another player that I heard about through the soccer community named Sebastian Legette, and I ended up playing with him in FC Dallas. He was at West Ham at the time. And I would say those were the two guys that were somewhat similar in age and or close enough in age that they were playing while I was growing up. I could kind of follow how their careers were going over there, and they were doing what I wanted to do. So I looked up to them.
That's awesome. And be able to play with one, I mean,
yeah,
even more amazing.
For sure.
So as you're going through this, were you going through high school and schooling? Was it hard to juggle playing soccer? Were you playing club? Were you just playing high school? What was your, at what age, if you did play club, what age did you start playing club sports or club soccer?
Started playing club soccer when I was like 10 or 11 years old, when I moved back to California, this time to the San Jose Bay Area. And it was with the end of the force. It was club at that time. I didn't start playing academy until 15 is when I was a developmental player, and then full-time at 16. But my youth career started and ended with the Anza Force, but there were a number of teams in the middle that I played for. Like, if you're not from that area, then you might not know them, but the Anza Titans, Juventus was a team from Overwood City. Played a little bit with some other teams like Sporting, which Sebastian Legette played for. Portuguese Athletic Club is another team. And I played with the San Jose Earthquakes as well, just before moving back to Danza.
That's fascinating. Me as a parent, my son is 11, and since he's been 5, we've been with a few clubs. We're in our third club now, and about fourth coach or fifth coach. And just some of it's just natural issues that happened within the club overturn, and some of it's just us moving around. So as a parent, that's nice to hear.
Yeah.
Hey, you weren't with the same group the whole entire time.
Yeah.
Because that's a big thing when you start talking about development and culture mm-hmm. with younger kids.
Yeah.
Being consistently with the same group of coaches or the same club philosophy. Okay, you overcame it and played. So as you're playing through high school, did you play on the high school team or did you just strictly stick to club?
When I was a freshman, I played, it was just in preseason. I was playing with the high school team for 2 games, ended up playing, but I ended up playing in a winter league game with the San Jose Earthquakes and the club team. And so I wasn't eligible to keep playing. I knew that going into playing that game. I tried out high school soccer, but I felt like it wasn't quite for me. It was cool because that was the only time I ever got to play competitively with my big brother, who was a senior at the time. It was a more athletic level and it was challenging in that sense, but it was frustrating from a technical and tactical standpoint. And I just didn't feel like it was what I needed. So I went back to playing club and that was it for high school.
I have to ask, because in Texas, you can play for club and play for your high school. It was not allowed in over in California then?
I think if I didn't play the winter season, then I could have played high school soccer, but I couldn't do the winter season with the Earthquakes as well. And I ended up playing and I basically just decided to forego the high school season.
I have to go back a little bit because you talked about in Japan. Did you play soccer in Japan or did you just strictly stick to swimming then? I think that's what you said, yeah. Swimming.
Yeah, I played soccer. I played for a local club team in Osaka and the level was okay. The kids were technically very good. I was more athletic. I was bigger. We didn't train super often, but we trained for what I remember was we either had a game every weekend or we trained, and the training was 4 hours on Saturday and you would have lunch in between. That was the kind of, and they were very disciplined and serious. And that was something that was a little bit different for me. And I had a hard time adjusting to that a little bit, but I did end up playing the 2 years I was there.
That's cool. Just because I recently came across about a gentleman, I think his name's Tom Beyer, who mm-hmm. I think he really tried to push soccer. I think started in the late 90s and early 2000s over in, mm-hmm. I think it was Japan, where he mm-hmm. was really pushing soccer, which is an interesting time frame. I'm assuming you're mm-hmm. on the tail end of that because of how much younger you are than me, but I find it very fascinating that you're able to play. So as you came back to the States playing, you played for San Jose Quakes. And when was the deciding moment that you wanted to make the jump to college, or did you want to make the jump straight to pros? Because you're kind of in that DA era where mm-hmm. you can either do either or of with the pyramid scheme website.
Yeah. So if I had the opportunity to go straight to pro, I would have liked to have explored that. I always felt like I could always go back to school, even if it wasn't in the same capacity of going straight to a 4-year institution, scholarship, all those things. But it just didn't really work out that way. And I had a good opportunity to go play in college. So I took that route. I went to UC Berkeley and I played 4 seasons there. I graduated a semester early to line up with the MLS draft and I got drafted in 2019 to Houston Dynamo.
That's impressive. And I know we went back and forth for a bit. You graduated with a degree in economics. As someone that loves numbers and math, it's mm-hmm. quite the accomplishment, just because economics is a fun topic. We can go on a side tangent there if you want it anytime you want. But so how was it juggling college and playing the beautiful game at a college level? Because mm-hmm. the coursework is demanding. I know what your degree is, so it's high-level math, high-level at learning, and then high-level playing. You have a short season. It's a lot of soccer. So how did you learn to balance it all? Was college a place where they helped you make sure you were able to balance it all, or did you attach to a senior? What worked for you starting off as a freshman then?
Yeah, my approach even in high school was that I wanted to... So soccer was the main focus, but I wanted to do relatively well in school and definitely well enough that my academics didn't bother soccer. And so I always tried to be in a place where I felt kind of in control of the schoolwork and I wasn't needing to sacrifice soccer to catch up or to pass a class or anything like that. What it took for me was just prioritizing, and I knew right away that I wasn't going to be able to say yes to everything. And so I sacrificed a lot of my social lives and opportunities in college, because there are endless opportunities, whatever you want to do in college, because you're surrounded with kids your age and there's so many things to do, so many activities. And for me, it meant just taking care of school and soccer and finding times to have fun with friends within that, taking care of my work first and prioritizing that.
Now, do you find, looking back, was the curriculum that the school had set up for you to have tutors, or was there a mentoring program within the college? That's something I've heard happen in some schools where they have, they try to match you with a senior or a junior to help you learn the ropes, so to speak, coming in the fall. Was there something like that for you at college, or could you explain a little bit more on that?
Yeah, we had a number of resources. We had a team-specific counselor that helped kind of make sure we were on track with graduating on time, taking the classes we needed to, all those things. And then we also had access to tutors for specific classes, especially the ones that were kind of more general ed. As you got more specific into the class, there weren't as many resources about those specific classes, but regular calculus class or introductory econ, that was provided. Those resources were provided. And so I used those while I was there.
Awesome. And you said you graduated early so you can enter into the MLS draft. So how was the process of going through the MLS draft and then being selected for it?
It was a whirlwind, because after my senior year of college, I didn't have a whole lot of interest from MLS teams. And the only combine that I got invited to was the San Jose Earthquakes combine, probably because I was local and I had played for the academy at some point. I signed with my agent that I'm currently with right now, right after the college season ended. And he helped me get into a number of other combines. And so I ended up San Jose Earthquakes combine, Atlanta United's combine. There was a combine in Las Vegas for maybe 5 or 6 MLS teams and a couple of USL teams altogether. And from those three, the teams that had seen me in those combines submitted my name to the MLS saying that they wanted to see me in the MLS combine. And typically there's a number of people who drop out that were initially invited, and the next person up gets invited. And I ended up being the last person that was invited. I guess somebody was injured or something, or whatever. Maybe they dropped out. I took their spot and I went to the MLS combine. And so I got to play in front of every MLS team and other scouts and so on. And that's what really changed my trajectory going into the draft. And from not knowing if I was going to get drafted, I found out, like, I think it was the morning of, my agent texted me saying that I was going to get picked in the first round. I wasn't in Chicago for the draft in person because I didn't even know about the draft, to be honest, where it was. And guys were flying directly from Orlando to Chicago, and I flew from Orlando back to California, back home, because that was just the plan. It wasn't something that I was thinking about. And so I wasn't there when I got picked, but I was watching it on TV.
That's awesome. So reflecting back on that moment, because it was, like you described, it was a whirlwind of an experience. What advice, or what is that like going through the Columbine? Because I honestly have never watched the MLS Columbine. I just started following soccer heavily 5 years ago. And now I'm starting to learn more because my kids are getting older. So can you explain it for parents that are uneducated like myself about the MLS Combine?
Yeah, basically combines are just like an open tryout for a team, and you get thrown in with a bunch of guys you don't really know, and you typically just play a game, and they're watching you, and they scout to see if there's somebody of interest. And from there, sometimes nobody gets brought in. Other times they'll like a player or two, and they'll mark that name down to potentially draft that player. And the MLS Combine is the biggest one of them all. And that one was over the course of a week or so. There were two games, one training session, which was like passing, small sided, just watching players move and play. There were also interviews where teams could request to speak with a player and get to know them. And so you would get a text saying, okay, you have an interview today with Houston Dynamo. And you'd walk over to the other side of the hotel, at least for that year, and you'd go up to whatever room that the staff or the Dynamo were, and you spoke with them, and they asked you questions and tried to determine if you're a good fit and if they liked you as a person, your character. And so I did a number of those during that week as well. But yeah, it's kind of a interesting experience because you're thrown in with a bunch of people just playing a game. It shows who like the street ballers are, the people who can adapt to different environments. And I feel like just playing wherever I could, guest playing, all those things, I think aided me in kind of showing well when it came time to adapting to those kinds of environments.
So would you say that through the Columbine and through the draft, that your past experiences of what I like to call neighborhood ball, from the sounds of like just picking up and playing, really helped you be where you're at today versus the complete total structure that kids play in today, that there's no going to the park and playing. It's all team practice and another activity than team practice and games. And do you feel like that really helped you set you apart? You talked about guest playing also. So did you feel that also gave you the edge because you were able to adapt and play with other players?
I definitely think so. I think that, you know, structure is good to an extent, but there also has to be time for kids to just play, be free, try things, and just kind of adapt. And I think that's something that's really important that kids should still be getting.
I think as a parent, that's a big thing that's missing. And it's very hard because we don't have, everyone's like, oh, just send your kids out to the park. I live in Texas. The closest park is...
Yeah.
There's no grass fields near it. It's around the neighborhood, around the block in the neighborhood, but we don't have open space in my neighborhood for kids to go play. We have to go down the street to go play where he practices. Yeah. He wants to have an open field. So there's those type of things. Going along that line, now you're drafted and you're playing for Houston Dynamo. So let's build up through your career now up until present day. So you got drafted by Houston Dynamo. How was that experience playing for them? And was there any... Did you always play for them? Were you loaned out? Because I know when you first start off, sometimes players get loaned out, or was it strictly playing for Houston?
Yeah, so the first year and a half was quite difficult. I found it to be a difficult transition on and off the field. I don't think that Houston was a great place for young players at the time that I went. A lot of the homegrown players would sign, play out their contract, and then just get released. Draft picks would come and go, and the team was struggling. Coaches were just getting cycled through, and it was kind of, there wasn't much room for long-term thinking and developing a player. The first year and a half was difficult. I ended up starting to break through in 2020 in my second year, the second half of it, where I was playing for Tab Ramos. My current coach, Pablo Mascherini, was the assistant that year. And then that carried over to 2021, where I played significant minutes. I enjoyed that year. And then the last year of it wasn't enjoyable. I wanted to leave, but I wasn't able to. And they made it really difficult for me to explore other options. And so that was a frustrating time where the rules of MLS and free agency and all that were really restricting. And I realized how restricting it could be.
All right, a quick break. This one's for my fellow grassroots coaches. We all know how tough it is to keep every kid engaged and still running a great session when time is tight. That's why I'm excited to partner with Soccer Coach Weekly. Since 2006, they've helped over 50,000 coaches, parents, teachers from all over the world. And here's the best part. As a Chat by the Pitch listener, you can get 50% off a full year of premium access. Just click the link in the show notes and apply the code EN50. And again, that's EN50 for 50% off. Plan fast, coach smart, Soccer Coach Week.
Looking and comparing the United States model for professional soccer, I think we're on the cusp, in my honest opinion, with USL getting their first division team with going against the MLS. This is going to make the MLS have to change paths of how they do things with the free market and for players. So as you have gone through there, have you seen an evolution with the for players that are frustrated that want to leave, or is it nothing against the MLS? This is just so parents can understand, because we don't get a chance to look behind the curtain often, and people don't talk about it enough unless you listen to a lot of soccer. And I have listened to a lot of soccer and I've not heard much on behind the curtains going on.
Yeah. The MLS is a unique league with kind of some weird rules that even people within the league have a hard time understanding. Basically, every 5 years or so, there's a negotiation that happens between the Players Association of the MLS and the MLS itself. And the players try to gain rights, and the MLS tries to push back. And there's always kind of like, you know, us threatening to lock out and them kind of trying to call our bluff or claim that we're not going to do it. At the time when I joined the league, man, free agency was something crazy. It was like, you had to be like 28 years old and you had to have 8 years of service or something like that. By the time I finished my first contract, so 4 years into playing in MLS, it was 25 and 5, I believe. So the issue was, for me specifically, was that I had finished my rookie deal. I didn't want to sign again with the Houston Dynamo, but the Houston Dynamo had my rights and I couldn't sign with any other team. And so the Dynamo had control over my rights and my future in MLS. And not too many people know this, but because I was kind of getting forced out of the league in 2023 at the beginning of the year, because the Dynamo weren't trading me and I wasn't re-signing with them, I was basically unemployed for maybe about a month and a half or more, from January 1st to middle of February. And then I ended up signing a flexible contract with San Antonio FC in the USL, where I could leave if I had an opportunity in MLS. Started preseason with them, and then a trade happened with FC Dallas and Houston Dynamo, and then I ended up in Dallas right before the first game of the season.
I'm grateful for that.
Me too.
Now, looking at your career, so let's start with 2019, because that was the last of what I call the normal during 2020. How was playing through COVID then? I'm just curious. I know we didn't talk about this prior, but I'm just thinking about it now because it is a unique time. And college was very unique. And now the MLS. How was it for the MLS as a player?
Very weird. It ended up actually being a real blessing for me, because I was pretty burnt out after the 2019 season. And I kept training hard in the offseason, hoping that 2020 would be better. And I knew there's going to be a new coach, new opportunities. But there was stuff going on in my personal life as well that mentally was weighing on me. I showed up to preseason and I just wasn't in the plans. And I wasn't playing in the preseason games. I was on the side and off to the side in training, and yeah, I wasn't enjoying it at all. I really, every morning, just didn't want to show up, but I just went through the motions. And then COVID happens, and we were on lockdown, and I was in a studio apartment in Houston. And so I left and drove to Denton, Texas, and stayed with my now fiance's family during quarantine. And I didn't realize how long it would actually end up being, but it ended up being for quite a long time. And I had the chance to just recharge mentally, physically during that time. And when I came back, I was in a much better place. And, you know, it led to the second part of that season going much better. It was super weird because they had these workouts for us to do at home, and everybody was doing them, maybe not everybody fully. Some people showed up out of shape and it was clear, but then we showed up back in market, and then we had a quarter of the field to ourselves each, and we weren't allowed to use the same balls. We weren't allowed to pass it to each other at first, and we had to bring our own equipment and set up our field in the way they told us. And we did our conditioning and technical work, and then we went home. You get in your car and you go home, and that continued for a while. And then we started training together, and people were like, there's no way we're going to have a season. But then we ended up doing the bubble in Orlando, and we had an MLS's back tournament. And then there was a little bit of a break after that. And then they resumed games without fans. And that was also like a really strange environment, and continuing to test very often. And all of those experiences were super unique, especially MLS's back was such a weird one because we were in this bubble together in this nice resort, and there's all the teams together for weeks. And if you knew anybody within the league, you could see them, you could hang out with them, and you're just kind of like having this weird shared experience while the rest of the world is just at home, not doing anything. That was a really strange experience for sure. And it was, depending on how long your team stayed in it, it could be quite a long time that you're away from family too. So that was a unique thing too. Being young, not having kids or anything like that, it was a cool experience. It was fun. I actually enjoyed MLS's back and all of that. But it was something that we probably won't have again. And something that was really unique.
Were you able to create friendships and bonds through that were not there because you played for different teams, but now you have this connection because of the COVID experience and the bubble experience, which just call it that, the bubble mm-hmm. experience of that. And were you able to bond and forge friendships that are now all over the because of the COVID experience and the bubble experience, which just call it that?
Yeah, I stuck with kind of more just my teammates, and I got closer with them. I saw a former teammate of mine that went to Cal, hung out with him and spoke to him. Kind of had one-offs here and there, but for the most part, it was just spending a lot of time around my team and getting closer with some of the guys that were on that team at that year.
That's pretty cool. So now you move out of the bubble. And what was the next phase in your career at that point then? Mm-hmm. So that'd be 21 season. And I'm trying to think how the MLS goes. So you guys go until...
Just be 21, 22. Calendar year.
Calendar year. So 21, then 20, moving into 22. And that's when your rights were... You said, if I remember, I have it right. The 22 was when your rights were bought, or that was 23 that your rights were bought to.
It was at the end of 22, but it was already affecting me at the end of 21 because I was hoping to get a trade. There was an opportunity that I wanted to pursue within MLS, but the Dynamo blocked that trade, and then they proceeded to ask me to reduce my salary to fit their salary cap when I had played as many games as the other player in my position who's making five times what I was making. That's when the relationship with Dynamo ended because it was like, all right, if that's how you're going to treat me, I'm going to play on my contract. And then we'll see what happens after that. And they basically just threatened to hold my rights. And I said, okay, we'll see what happens. And then it was a little bit ugly at the end of 22, but after some time it worked out.
Just so everyone knows, I didn't look up any of his, because it's all public knowledge. You can go look it up, but I'm going to just use the current market. I'm going to use FC Dallas player Logan Farrington. If I'm remembering right, mm-hmm. his contract's under $90,000 for a mm-hmm. rookie contract. I think it's actually closer to 70. Bernard mm-hmm. Camungo's last year's contract is about, I think it was around $65,000 or $70,000 as a rookie mm-hmm. contract. Just so everyone understands, like, they're asking him to go even lower than those numbers, more than likely at that point of time. Just to throw that out there, you don't need to give us real numbers of real life, but I'm trying to make them understand the truth.
Yeah. It to be fair to the club, from their side of it, they realized that I had played a certain number of games that mandated a certain percentage increase in my salary, maybe like 7.5%. Nothing crazy. It doesn't break the bank, but it took me into a 1-18 senior roster spot, and they wanted me to be supplemental. So that was the real issue. But I felt from my performances that I deserved a senior roster spot at the least. And if there was going to be a conversation about a new contract, it would have to be an improved contract. At that point, I was pretty fed up and I just wanted change of scenery and wasn't allowed to leave and just had to play out the 22 season.
As a fan of this sport, it really breaks my heart because you are the player. I know it's a business at the end of the day, but if you're making an impact on the pitch, we can all go back and look at stats. You've always had great stats your whole career so far. So we can't say it's not a performance issue. You have always performed the MLS above average or much better than above average. And as a fan of who you are as a player, especially at your time here at FC Dallas, I always felt like you were the silent one on the, you and a few other players were the silent ones that were making changes on the pitch that you guys didn't get enough credit for. And I think fans really have to start paying attention to that type of stuff, because I don't think, unless you're a big name hotshot in the league, nothing's going to happen. It kills me a little bit on the inside, because here's the league that we have to go watch. And I know the rest of the world's not like this. It is. For players, and fans need to start understanding what is holding players back from being successful, in my opinion.
Yeah. There was my friend's agent was also kind of helping to look for opportunities for me in conjunction with my agent. And my friend's agent is Italian and he's well connected over there. He was the former director at Juventus. And I was trying to explain the situation to him and he had a really hard time understanding that I was out of contract, unemployed, but I wasn't allowed to sign with the number of MLS teams that had interest at the time. He's like, so you're out of contract, right? And I'm like, yes. And he said, but you can't leave. And I said, no, they own me still. And he was baffled. He just couldn't believe it. He said that is unreal. How did you guys agree to this? Before we,
A little history here. There's a player that left that got drafted in the MLS and went to Europe. And I can't remember what team owns his rights, but if he ever came back to the MLS, they still own his rights. So he has to play if he wants to play, he has to go through them in order to play in the MLS, which I think is a horrible situation for players.
It's crazy, but because the rights are improving every few years or so, depending on when he comes back, he might actually be qualified as a free agent. Because that was the situation I had where, had I gone to Europe and played there maybe for 3 years, when I came back, I would have been a free agent. Because in 3 years' time, the rules would have changed.
As a fan, it just kills me.
Yeah, but at the time, it was unfortunate timing that I had played 4 years and I needed fire.
Hello, I hope you all have enjoyed this week's episode with Sam. Sam, to me, is an inspirational player to even have on, to give me the time he has given me.
for this episode, the conversation we had, and I truly, honestly look up to him. But I'm not going to say too much more. This is a two-part series, so the rest of this interview will be next week. So I hope you will stay tuned until next week. Hey, everyone. If you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch. I want to tell you about something I've used and I truly believe in. Replayer. It's a sideline camera built for youth sports. Just set it up, hit record, and it captures the entire game automatically. No chasing the ball, no holding your phone, just hands-free, stress-free recording. The in-game tagging is one of my favorite features. One tap, and you can mark a big goal, ankle-breaking moves, or a clutch tackle. Then pull those clips for later for review, highlights, or social media. And the live streaming's next level. A buddy of mine actually watched his son's game while flying cross-country at 30,000 feet. That blew me away. If you're a parent or coach at the field every weekend, Replayer is a game changer. Head to replayer.com. That's R-E-E-P-L-A-Y-E-R.com. And I think you'll be amazed.